listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. Wadikap, buna diminata, buenos noches, dobro yutro, bon dia, dobro doshle. Welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. Wherever you happen to be all around this gorgeous planet, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, and thank you so much for being here. Those of you joining us for the very first time, a special welcome. I'm glad you're here, and I think you're going to be also very glad you are here. Well, there are some interesting developments in the news that we've been following for the past couple of days, and so they have come to pass. The Vatican has announced now that it is okay for Catholics to believe in extraterrestrials. That's good news, because a lot of them do already. And now it's official. It's okay for Catholics to believe in E.T. NASA made a big deal out of this press conference they were going to have today, and they had it. And there was a lot of expectation in emails that I was receiving, and in some of the telephone calls that we got to the show here. People were expecting to hear that Planet X has been found, or that it's on its way in, or Nibiru has been spotted. They were expecting that there would be such an announcement, or were wondering if it would be. We got really from NASA what I expected we would get, and that is something a bit less spectacular. What they announced was that they had found a small supernova that they had been looking for 50 years. Sort of. Lead up to the press conference said they were going to tell us about discovering something that they had been looking for, an object that they had been looking for the past 50 years. But you know what? That isn't what they told us about. What they told us about was the supernova that they had been looking at and studying for years. And that isn't quite what they had led up to, and it has caused some people to wonder if perhaps at the last minute there was the fix was in, and the supernova story may be a cover, you know, because it's something out there that people are going to begin seeing fairly soon in the skies, and that's a supernova. So that's the deal, okay? That's what it has come to, and I don't know. I don't know if it's a cover story. I don't know. I tend to believe it's not a cover story, just another story. You follow what I'm saying? I tend to think that it's not a cover because Planet X is on its way in and people are going to begin seeing it. I think that is just another story about something else they were looking at. Who knows? My guest this evening is Jerry Wills, and we're going to be exploring, along with him, some ancient ruins. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. Alien Seeker News has blasted off and is providing a new and important resource for everyone interested in UFOs, aliens, alien abductions, Bigfoot, Chupacabra, and more. Featuring five of the top UFO radio talk shows, lots of information and articles in free forums, Alien Seeker News has launched on its journey to greatness. Go to AlienSeekerNews.com, register for the free forums, and get the classic Flying Saucers Are Real by Major Donald Kehoe as a free ebook. Join today. Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com. Did you know The Kevin Smith Show selects one of its very best shows each week and turns it into a free podcast? Well, it's true. You can download free Kevin Smith Show podcast right now and get a free fresh podcast each week. Do you want to start building your own library of Kevin Smith shows? All you have to do is visit our website at kevinsmithshow.com and click the free podcast link. They're yours for the download. My guest this evening is Jerry Wills, and he's been with us before. I know you'll remember him, and you've probably by now watched the video that is embedded in my website. It's the Fox News report about Jerry's really dramatic and very successful work with a man who had been very, very severely injured, and it was a life-threatening situation. But Tonight, we may talk about healing some, but tonight, what we really want to focus on is another part, another side of Jerry, and that is the Indiana Jones side, the explorer side. He spent a lot of time in South America, and some other places, and has really been responsible for some amazing discoveries. One of them we talked about in a previous show. I said it looked like a star map, but it was a photograph of the desert floor, or of the of a plateau. And just amazing stuff. Well, tonight we're going to be talking about a lost city. I know that many, many, many of you are interested in the ancient civilizations around the world, and maybe particularly in the Mayan civilization, because of 2012, but the Mayan, the Aztec, the Olmec, the Toltec, the Inca, all inhabited the Americas. And there are some really phenomenal, amazing structures that they are responsible for, amazing cities, very advanced civilizations. And Jerry is here to talk with us about one of them. Jerry, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you, Kevin. It's a pleasure to be here with you this evening, and hello to everyone listening.
Was it your last trip to Peru where you discovered this city?
No, it wasn't the last trip. This particular discovery took place in the year 2000. We were down there to investigate some strange hieroglyphs on rocks that were in this river valley. Kathy actually is the one who's responsible for locating and decoding these stones. She's she's the research end of all of this. She pores over maps and satellite images, identifying places, and then she puts together logistics, and we both put together equipment lists. Then we go.
Okay, so this was in 2000.
Uh-huh.
And when you went there, did you have any inkling of an idea that there was this lost city, or did you find that out when you got there?
Well, we knew already that there were several different cities all through the Andes, all the way from Ecuador and Colombia, all the way down to, say, Argentina and Chile, all through the Andes. So we knew that there were a lot of places that have never been discovered. We'd heard lots of stories. But that really wasn't what our focus was in going in here. We simply wanted to go in and document these stones by taking pictures, by taking rubbings, and then try to analyze it later. It was a real surprise when Kathy suddenly discovered the language being used and deciphered this as being a map.
Okay, now these stones with these carvings or petroglyphs in them were located, you said, where?
Well, this is in northeastern Peru. It's in an area, and in Peru they have states like they do here in America. This particular state is called San Martin. This is where you find the Shining Path and other terrorists, as well as narco traffickers. It's one of the most dangerous areas of Peru. People that don't live there typically don't go into this place because it's so dangerous.
Is this near a village called Iquique?
I'm sorry, you broke up. What was
yeah,
that?
Is it near a village that is called Iquique?
No, actually, it's near a village. Well, it's near a village called Nuevo Tocache.
Okay. So you located the stones, you took pictures of them, you took rubbings, and then Kathy began to decipher these, and she found out that it's a map. Did she know what it was a map of?
Well, you know, the thing that we had learned previously in our other trips down to Peru was that the ancient people who lived there would make a stone look like the terrain. In other words, a huge boulder would be shaped into the shape of a mountain, a line of mountains or a mountain. And then they would put these symbols, usually just lines, showing where the trails are on the mountains. So you face the stone, and then you turn around 180 degrees, and you see the mountain. In this particular case, the stone was facing east, which was towards an open valley. So that was part of the clue for her. She took a look at that and turned around, and, of course, it was just all trees. It's just jungle. Couldn't make any details out. But she started working on these details, drawing them and putting them in order. And then we started talking to some of the really old men of the village who had been all over those mountains, asking them questions, and they said, yes, well, there's this here and this here. There's a waterfall there. There's a trail that goes here. And with that information, she started piecing it together and discovered that it was a language, but it was a language like you'd find on a map. And at that point, she said, well, is there a large city back there like Machu Picchu? Because everyone's familiar with Machu Picchu. And this fellow said, well, yes, he drew it on a chalkboard in an empty schoolroom. And his lines showing this place and the lines on the map started to coincide, and it all just kind of came together after that. So we asked, would you take us there? We were real surprised when he said yes.
Yeah, especially, I mean, he lives there, and this is a place where there are several rebel and terrorist groups operating, and so he would be very familiar with that fact. And you would think he would be afraid to do it.
Well, in all honesty, the rebels that live back there are basically farmers. And the reason why there was an uprising is because the government was coming in, the American government as well as Peruvian, to slash and burn the crops. The people that were holding the rifles were farmers, and the people who were in big trouble with their government were farmers that were doing the wrong kind of farming.
I see.
So we were hanging out with people who were, a part of that whole activity, and we were just very green behind the ears, you know. We weren't even thinking in these terms. We were looking for information.
All right, so he agrees to, and let me ask you if you can, I don't know if you keep it a secret, but just so that we can refer to him, can we have a first name?
For this fellow?
Yeah.
Oh, man, let me think. I'll have to ask Kathy what his name is.
Okay, well, we'll just refer to him as Roberto.
Okay.
Okay, so it's easier than saying he all the time. All right, so Roberto says, I'm going to take you to this lost city. Now,
yeah.
from where you were standing when he said that, how far was it? How long a journey would it be?
Well, you know, these fellows, they live there. They travel through those mountains the same way that you and I travel between our place and the grocery store. They know where it's at. And they're in very good condition. They said it was going to take us 2 days. Well, it took us more than that, because for every day that they could travel, we could only travel about a half a day. So it took twice as long. The terrain was just unbelievable. We were going always at an incline going up, but once we got back in there a couple of days, we were going through the most dense jungle that I've ever seen. It was like something out of Edgar Rice Burroughs. The jungle canopy was above our head, about 200 feet or so. There were large vines hanging down. There was mist hanging beneath this canopy like small puffy clouds. And there were tropical birds flying through. In the area we were walking in, there were saplings that were probably 6 foot tall, 7, 8 foot tall, plus bushes. And not much of a thin trail that went through these. And we went through this area. It took us about a day. Had to camp out there overnight and then continue. And after that, then we started going up one side of the mountain and down the other side. And it was very steep. Just unbelievable.
I would imagine you also were carrying all kinds of equipment with you.
Well, yeah, that was the other crazy thing. Because we were wanting to be well equipped, we had brought a lot of stuff we probably didn't need. We had five burros loaded down with equipment. There were two men from the village of, one from Belém and the other from Monte Cristo, that were helping us along. We had an interpreter. We had an ex-Special Forces Peruvian military fellow. His name is Coco. He was with us. And we had a fellow who was previously with the government to take supplies in there. He'd become friends with everyone, and he was our liaison with the mountain people. So they all knew him. His name was Huglar. They all knew him, and they were... they trusted him, so if he said it was okay for us to be there, then, you know, as long as the people in control allowed it, then we could move through. We were made to wear about 3-inch tall gold emblems. Mine was of an Inca, and I think Kathy's was a snake. We had to wear those right over our heart.
What was the purpose of that?
So the snipers wouldn't shoot us.
Oh, very nice.
That's how they identified that it was us and that we were going to be allowed to come through. One morning, I didn't put mine on right away. And they all got just really bent out of shape and said, you've got to put this on. You've got to do it right now. And they made me kneel down and dig it out of my pocket and put it on immediately. They said that there were snipers, and if we didn't have this on, they couldn't identify who we were.
Well, I guess that is an important piece of information to know if you're going through there, huh?
Yeah, we didn't have any idea at the time until we were told that.
Yeah. So before that, you didn't know what the purpose of these emblems were or what it was.
We didn't have any idea. We just thought it was some goofy little thing making it seem like we were on some big expedition and this was our insignia, you know?
Mm-hmm. We had a very practical purpose, though.
Oh, yeah, very practical.
Okay, so you're trekking through the jungle up one side of a mountain, down the other side, and it took you about 4 days to get there?
I think we arrived on the fifth day.
Mm-hmm. Exhausted, no doubt.
Yeah, way exhausted. It was, you know, we went from about 800 feet to about 8,000 feet over the course of those days. When we finally arrived to this place called Mamak, we were like really expecting to find a town. I was looking forward to getting a hotel room, cleaning up, and getting a cup of coffee, but instead it was this multi-room mud hut building with huge wooden doors and a farm family living there. Well, they graciously allowed us to use the chicken coop to sleep in.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was chicken coop and corn storage room. But at the time, when we arrived, we were too tired to notice, but we were there for several days because we kind of got stranded there. The thing about Mamak is that it's built at the lower levels of this enormous Chechepoya city.
All right, now, how many people live at this Mamak?
Oh, there's a husband, wife, daughter, and two young boys.
So they live very isolated from other humans. Were they surprised to see other humans arriving?
Well, yeah, they were surprised that that's where we were coming to. But they were very gracious and said, well, yeah, it's fine. You can stay here. Let's clear out this room and let you stay over here in this part. They had just killed a bear that's not supposed to exist in the Andes, but, well, I ate some of it, so I presume that it was real. It does exist.
Mm-hmm.
But,
that's kind of like Bigfoot is not supposed to exist, but, you know.
Well, it's a black bear, mm-hmm. and I've done as much research as I humanly can talking to the bear experts of the world. And they say there is no such thing as a 6 foot tall or larger black bear in the Andes. It doesn't exist. But I've got pictures of its skin, and I ate some of its meat.
All right, so you were there for several days. Why were you stranded?
Well, what happened after we arrived, the next day we took off. We should have rested, but we took off. We were going to go to this next place, an even larger even larger city. On the way to this place, it's supposed to be 2 hours. It took 5.5 hours to get there. Well, because they said it was such a short distance, we didn't take any flashlights. We didn't take anything with us, really, except a little bit of food. It started raining at about 9,000 feet with the wind blowing, and it didn't stop raining for about 3 of those 5.5 hours. So we got completely soaking wet. By the time we got to the perimeter of this lost city, we were so wet and it was so cold we were becoming hypothermic. And it was now about 3 in the afternoon in the Andes, in the jungle. You can count on the sun going down at 5:30. It's dark. And when you're in the jungle and in that part of the mountains, at about 5 o'clock it's dark. Well, we didn't have any flashlights. We didn't have any dry clothes. And it was going to be getting cold because 8, 9, 10,000 feet is not the place to be and to be soaking wet. So we had to make our way from that site all the way back another 5.5 hours to get back to Mamak. And we didn't know if we were going to make it or not. The reason we were stuck is because of, a couple of the guides got blisters on their feet. I had a horse roll over me as we went over a cliff. I landed in a tree and it kind of boogered up my hip. So I was having trouble walking any distances, and that's probably another reason why it took 5.5 hours. And, you know, everybody had something going wrong except Kathy. She was just 110% and just fine. She had nothing wrong with her. We had to stay up there that long because the authorities thought that we might have been captured by terrorists, and they didn't want to fly in there and have their helicopter gunned down. It took about 2 times of sending a runner all the way back to Tokachi, requesting a helicopter to fly us out of there. Now, bear in mind, there is no communication between where we are and Tokachi. The only thing they had was one of those radios you might have gotten in 1973. Or 73, or maybe even 70. It was one of those 16 transistor Zenith radios that takes a bunch of C cells.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the batteries were about dead. So we were listening for an announcement on the local radio station, which was mostly static and a little bit of a signal. And we're listening for them to announce that they're coming to pick us up.
All right, we have a break coming up, and I don't want us to get into too much of the rest of the story before this break, because I don't want to interrupt it. But right now, we've got you stuck in Mamak. Am I saying it right? Mamak?
Mamak, yep.
Okay. You're stuck at about, 8,000 feet?
Yeah, we're about 8,000 feet in elevation.
All right. It's been a rainstorm and no communications. So we're going to leave you up there for just a moment. You're stuck there again. And we will return in just a moment with the rest of this amazing, amazing story.
And we are back. My guest this evening is Jerry Wills, and we are talking with him about this amazing expedition that he and Kathy took to a lost city up high in the Andes.
Jerry, we have you stuck up in the mountains at a place called Mamak, and you've been over a cliff and landed in a tree and been soaked in a rainstorm, and now you're back at Mamak waiting for, I guess, rescue, huh?
Yeah, I've kind of jetted through the story. There were some details that I was just reminded by Kathy that I should have included, some interesting little tidbits. And I'll throw those in as I'm continuing this story. One of the things that was really peculiar, when we were on our way there, we had about 3 hours to go before we were to arrive at Mamak. And before we could get to Mamak, we had to cross this river. Well, the river really wasn't that wide. It was probably 20, 30 feet wide. But the only way to cross it was to cut down some trees, skin off the branches, and throw them across this river. So the saplings were probably 8 inches around that they were cut down. There were two of them for our feet, and there was one that was cut down and used for us to hold on to. Before we could cross, before we decided to cross, we thought we would stop and eat something. We'd just come out of this really dense jungle, and we were covered with all kinds of pollen and just wet. So as we sat down to eat, there were thousands of bees that started swarming around us. Well, the natives, the locals there, they weren't natives, they were locals, like farmers. They just sat there and just ate their rice and beans and, you know, just, you know, shoot bees off so they could just eat, and the bees were all over them. Kathy decided to do the same thing as the locals were doing, but it was just bugging me pretty bad. So I was kind of waving my hat around trying to get these bees away from me so I could eat a couple of power bars. And I would run over to this area where there weren't any bees, and the bees would follow me. So it was really quite a mess. Finally, we're finished eating. We're going to cross this river. We're about 20 feet above the river on these saplings, and the water is just rushing underneath of us with all these jagged granite rocks. If we had fallen, we'd have really been in big trouble. We had to do side steps to get across this thing, and the whole time we're going across it, the bees are still all over us. So it was quite an experience to get across that river. And once we got across and got back into the jungle, the bees disappeared. Then the mosquitoes started showing up until we got a little bit higher elevation.
Nobody got stung?
No, no one got stung at all. The bees were just collecting the pollen and the moisture off our clothing. They were having their lunch, too.
All right, so now you actually made it up to the Lost City,
yes. But
you had to turn back.
Right, but what we saw of this place, it was quite a grand place, and just above it was another, even more grand, and that's the one that's the most interesting and the one that we want to go back to. This place that we got to, and then we had to turn back, it was just enormous. There were buildings everywhere, but the jungle had grown up all through it. And this jungle was so thick that if you had walked 10 foot away from a person, you wouldn't know where you had come from because the foliage just blends itself back in so well. It's so dense that you could start hollering, and you really couldn't hear anything. It was just the most amazing mess that I've ever seen. But these buildings, they were all through this. As we were climbing around through this lost city before we headed back, in the roots of a tree, I noticed, and of course it's raining still, I noticed something shiny, and when I looked down, I noticed that this shiny thing looked like gold. Well, I pulled it out of the roots of the tree and took it with me, but it was so heavy and so cold that I decided that, you know, we should pass it off between each other. It was a chunk of gold, and it was about, I don't know, maybe 30 pounds or so. It was a huge, huge thing. Probably, I'm looking around to see what kind of looks that big. It was probably twice the size of a DVD, and I would say about 2 inches thick at the center. Just a big nugget with some black flaky stuff that was in it. That eventually was lost because we were passing it between each other as we were going back to Mamak, and you know, you trip over a stob and try to catch yourself, and whatever you're holding is dropped, and that was one of the things that was held that got dropped. But as we were walking along through this region, we knew that just right up ahead and right above, there was this other place that we were going to get to. This was a lost city, an honest-to-goodness lost city that you could just stand back and look at like you might expect to see in the movies. It was larger than Machu Picchu. It was in better condition than Machu Picchu. It had huge, huge stones that had been cut and shaped very precisely, just like at Machu Picchu. Except these rooms inside these buildings had stone floors, and the roof was made of stone as well.
Now, where at Machu Picchu, what are the floors like there?
They're made, they're just dirt.
Okay.
And because, you see, at Machu Picchu, you have a couple of different cultural eras there that you never hear about when you go. There's the Inca era, and then there's the ancient era that we don't know who they were. But the ancient era is built much different than the Inca period. And what we believe the Inca did is they disassembled some of these places, took the roofs off, and took the floors out, and changed it into what their version of perfection would be. We believe that Machu Picchu is one of these lost cities, like the one that we found way up in the Andes. The thing that's missing at Machu Picchu, and maybe it's missing because they did away with it, was that in this place that we found, there were these roads that traversed the mountains. They were, each one of these places is about a day apart for the locals. About a day, maybe a day and a half, depending on conditions. Well, there was at one time, and we saw evidence of this, a roadway system that was probably, I guess, at least as wide as any street there in Phoenix, and in some places it was as wide as a 4 or 5 lane street would be.
And these were cut. That's what I was going to ask. These roads have a stone surface or a dirt?
Stone surface with curbs.
Uh-huh.
In most places, I mean, you follow it for a while and then it just ends because there have been landslides and the jungle growing up through it, you know, and it just destroys it. But in some places, it's still intact, and it's just astonishing. I've looked into the roads built by the Romans, and they have, they have nothing on what these roads were. These roads were as good as anything you would ever expect to see in the modern world, except they weren't asphalt. They were cut and placed stones, but completely smooth. There were no imperfections in the smoothness of the surface. They were so precisely cut and placed.
Were you able to get photographs of this place or video?
Well, we didn't have a video camera with us. We did have a Canon Elan, which is a $1,000 camera. The problem is that when we got caught in the rain, and we didn't expect to, the camera got completely soaked and just about ruined. I had it rebuilt. We still have it. But the film that was in there was destroyed, and you know, the camera itself just wasn't working thereafter. That's why we're going to go back.
This city that you're telling us about, does it have a name? Do the locals have a name for it?
Good question. You know, they do have names for these things up there, and I think these are names that they just give them. I don't remember what the name was that they had given it. Kathy and I decided to call it the City of Dawn because the entryway to the city is facing east, and dawn's light would come through the gates of that city and just go over the entire place at that point.
All right, so what about the origins of this city? Do the locals have any story, any information about who built this city?
Yeah, they do. They say that people that were almost 7 foot tall, and they kept referring to me, they said they were as tall as I am and maybe a little taller. They used to live there, and they consider this city to be haunted, and they're just scared to hell of being there because they don't want these people to come back and find them there. There was even corn in the in some of the buildings where they stored corn and potatoes. They said that these folks were fantastic warriors. They had long, reddish-blonde hair, blue eyes, green eyes, and that they were fair-skinned. And they traveled throughout those mountains. They didn't know how far either direction, but they knew that they came back periodically a long time ago. There were rumors that these people would go through villages and take people and eat them. Well, I think that was a little bit of a stretch. But the thing that really astonished us was, and I know this isn't archaeologically correct because the time periods aren't right.
Tell you what, Jerry, we have to take a break. We will sit on the edge of our chairs waiting to hear what really astonished you about all this. I'm astonished already. All right, folks, we'll be back with Jerry Wills in just a moment.
seems we've found a system. To turn people out like pistons on a line. And people aren't people. They're just numbers on an endless sea of time. And if you grow up different, they look at you as if you were a crime. Cause you can't count numbers, and you won't swim in their sea of time. Every generation thinks its dreams have never been dreamt before. And every generation thinks that it alone can end all wars. And every generation grows older quicker, but I'm not so sure what every generation is generated for. Said, you will find they'd break all his rules and write their own instead. The God is a TV set, it keeps pounding in their heads.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Let me quickly remind you that if you have not yet subscribed to the K-Files e-zine, you need to do so. It is our free weekly newsletter, and you can subscribe by going over to kevinsmithshow.com and clicking on the K-Files e-zine banner. You'll see it big red letters right under the buttons that you click to open our player. All right. We're talking with Jerry Wills.
And Jerry, when we went away for break, you were about to tell us the thing that astonished you most.
Well, as I was saying, it's not going to be accurate archaeologically, but it's the best point of reference that I can make that everyone will understand. What we discovered were some symbols that were emblazoned upon some stones up there, and there were also frescoes still painted on the walls. There was also a bas-relief of an individual who was very tall, and two smaller beings that seemed to be like people, but they didn't really look like people exactly. All three of them were looking up and to the left as though they were looking up towards the sky. We found this over and over in many of the places that we were exploring in this particular trip. The thing that I found remarkable was that the size of the feet of the people who were supposed to have lived there, the doorways of this place were like 7 foot tall. The tables were made of stone. There was a big stone chair at the end of the table, like a throne. And everything was my size.
And how tall are you?
I'm almost 7 foot tall. And that's one of the reasons these people were just a little surprised to see me walking through, because my hair is down past my shoulders. And it's kind of a reddish blonde color. So it really surprised the folks in this one village called Shunte.
So they thought you were one of these guys who had come back.
Right, because the women were blonde and fair-skinned, you know, and Kathy is blonde and fair-complected, so they didn't know what was going on, and they were pulling their kids off the street and hiding, and it was weird. But the thing that was surprising to me, number one, there was a huge sandbar in front of this place that still had seashells in it, as though the ocean had washed up there at some point in time. It was a large sandbar. And that's how you get into the cities, by crossing this. The other thing is that these people and those symbols seem to be runic symbols. In other words, ruin, R-U-N-E, like the Vikings would have used. Well, I know the Vikings, in the timeline of when this place would have been inhabited, which I think was before the Great Flood, I think that the timeline for Vikings, you know, is well, I know it's much different than that, so I don't know who these people are. When I made mention of this when we came back, we were pretty well laughed at until we were crazy, and now I know why, because of the timeline for the Vikings. However, in Paraguay, a similar place was found in the 40s, in the late 40s, and it had the same symbols, it had the same construction, and it's called the Viking Stronghold. And if you do a look up on Google, you can look up Paraguay and Viking Stronghold, and you can read that remarkable story about it.
Who decided to call it the Viking Stronghold?
The archaeologist who was investigating it.
Mm-hmm. So it was his opinion that these were Vikings? Or is he just using that because they were similar?
Well, his opinion was that they were Vikings because of the evidence that he found. But the timeline doesn't match.
Any suggestions for a solution to that problem?
No, and we're still trying to figure it out. One of the reasons we want to go back into this area, as difficult and dangerous as it's going to be, is because we want to document it on HD video. We want to do a documentary about it, and this time keep the cameras dry and completely videotape this place so we can bring it back and put it on Expeditions TV for everyone to see.
How big is this city?
It's quite large. I would say there were probably, you know, 10,000 people that would have lived there.
How does that compare to Machu Picchu?
Machu Picchu probably would have housed 1,000. This place was so large, we didn't really have a chance to see everything.
So do you think if you were to go back, that it would still be in the condition that you saw it in? Or do you think it would be more ruined now? What do you think?
No, it'd be in the same condition we saw it was in. It's above the tree line. It's at a place that is perpetually covered in the clouds, except for the odd occasion when the clouds, you know, move away from it. It would be in the same condition. It's been like it was when we found it. It had been like that for, I'm guessing, over 10,000 years. So 2, 3, 5, 6 years, 8 years, it wouldn't make that much difference in the scheme of things.
Why do you think that it was inhabited prior to the Great Flood?
Well, there are two reasons for that, and we don't really have any solid evidence for this. It's a lot of speculation because we really haven't been able to decipher one really key element in this. But, you know, think about the Great Flood covering the whole world. I don't know if that really happened or not. There are enough stories about it, and even in the Andes you find stories about it. But there was this huge sandbar full of seashells and other debris that looked like it had washed up there, and the sandbar looked as though it were more recent than the city. So that was one of the clues to us that we would like some clarification on. We'd like to be able to figure out. And the other is a very mysterious stone that we found on our way back in a little village called Metal. And it's spelled like metal, M-E-T-A-L. But they call it Metal. And up on the side of a mountain above Metal, there is a stone that's right now, it's buried in the dirt because it was covered back up. We know exactly where it is. And upon this stone, there are these figures that tell a story. And the story that it looks like it's telling is that there was something that came through the sky and that water had come up into the Andes. And after all was said and done, the final face is one that's very solemn. And I guess that's when they started over again. And all around this area, it looks like it must have been some kind of a ceremonial site. I don't like to use the word temple because I don't know that it was a temple. But it was some kind of a ceremonial site. There were all kinds of huge blocks of stones with faces and like a spider, a big spider was on one of them. And, you know, all these different designs on all these stones, but this one in particular is like an arch wedge. If your listeners are interested to see what this stone looked like, it's one of the pieces of film we were able to salvage, and that picture is up at expeditionsmagazine.com. It's spelled with an X, not an EX. expeditionsmagazine.com. Look for a story in the pull-down menu after you've entered the site that says Expedition to El Dorado. I named it that because I found a big chunk of gold.
Well, yeah. Did you see any other smaller chunks of gold laying around?
Well, you know, we saw what we thought were platinum and silver in the streams. It was just astonishing, Kevin, because there were boulders there that were as big as a Penske truck, a 26-footer, big boulder that was just solid iron. It was all rusted, and the stream was running past. It was running past orange, like a bright orange, like rust. And in this stream, we saw different silver-colored stones, and when we pulled them out, well, we noticed that it wasn't stone at all. Instead, it was either pyrite or platinum or silver.
Wow. All right, we have our top of the hour break imminent upon us here within a minute. When we come back on the other side of this break, you had mentioned to me something about a connection with the Indiana Jones movie that's coming out, and I am very interested to hear that when we get back. So if you don't mind, during the break, sort of collect your thoughts on that and hit us with your best shot when we come back.
Oh, you'll like it.
All right. I guarantee you I will. I know I always do. Any time Jerry is on the show, he keeps me on the edge of my seat no matter what we talk about. So we're going to our top of the hour break. When we come back for just a few minutes, I'm going to continue talking with Jerry, and then we'll open the telephone lines for you, all right? So when we get back, no need to start calling right away, because I'm going to be talking with Jerry more about this connection with the new Indiana Jones movie, and then we'll open the telephones, all right? We'll be back right after this.
With pain, but I drew her out in something truth, and we stood at the gateway of the sun with our love. We soared among the clouds. We had just begun a night in Machu Picchu, where the mountains touch the sky. Shame. And I took a vow to protect her to the last as we stepped aboard that faded train. Our journey took us to an Incan resting place. She read a prayer for lovers past. We took a path to purity and truth, and we stood at the gateway of the sun. With our love, we soared among the clouds. We had just begun a night in Machu Picchu, where the mountains touch the sky.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
All right, welcome back. And we're talking with Jerry Wills this evening. We're talking about an expedition that he and his wife made to South America and up into the Andes to a lost city. Let me remind you again, if you have not yet subscribed to the K-Files e-zine, you need to do so. There's really no reason why you need to keep sitting in the dark. It's free, and you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. There's two ways to do it. You can go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, click on the K-Files e-zine banner or button that you'll see there. It's in big red letters. And subscribe, all right? Or if you're listening via our player, just click the button on the left side over there that says K-Files. All right, now, Jerry, when we went away for break, I had mentioned that you told me something about a connection with this new Indiana Jones movie. Hit us with it.
Well, I thought it would be interesting for everyone because the movie is coming out, and I think it's called Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls. There were reasons why we've been looking for these lost cities. I have a good friend who's now living over in Holland. His name is Joshua
Shapiro.
Shapiro, sorry.
Mm-hmm. He's been on the show.
Yeah, he's an old buddy of mine. And he really is the one that got me interested in the Crystal Skulls. There are rumors that there's a blue crystal skull somewhere in the Andes, and I think as much as he's interested in finding it, I would like to find it as well. The reason we were going in there was twofold. One is because of that. We figured that a city that size would have something to the equivalency of a library, a place where they would have stored their sacred items, their records, things that would tell a story. Not that we would take them, unless it's a crystal skull, of course. But because, we've even found gold artifacts and idols and stuff. If you go to expeditionstv.com, you'll see a thing that says neat stuff. You can click that and you can see some of the artifacts that we photographed. But we don't take any of this stuff, not even the gold ones, because that just isn't right. But we wanted to gather information because we feel that there was some other influence that was taking place on the Earth before the Great Flood. It may have been extraterrestrial. It may have been just more advanced civilizations or societies that were present on the Earth at that time. We don't know which it was, but whatever it was, they had technology we don't have, and I believe they knew that something was about to happen to the planet, and they were as anxious to prepare for that as they could be, and that's why they built these cities that just don't come tumbling down very easily. So,
Jerry, you mentioned earlier having seen these carvings of a very tall person and some shorter people, and they're all looking up and to the left. What do you think that's about? What's the importance of that?
Well, it could be anything. We don't have any details on why they were portrayed in such a way. It could be that they were watching for the rising of Venus, or it could have been they were watching for Orion to come back into view again, which would signal a change of seasons. Or it could mean that they were looking for someone to return, whether it's from another part of this world or from some other world. We don't know. But it could have been any of these things or something we haven't even thought of yet. Mysteriously, there is a large plaza that's in another nearby city that we also located that has huge, huge heads that were way too large for anyone to ever try to steal, on the order of about a ton apiece, and these huge heads are looking up and to the left. And there are a whole series of these heads. They're cone heads. They're not round heads. They're like cone heads, and they're all looking up and to the left.
When you say cone heads, are you talking about the elongated skulls like we have seen pictures of both from Egypt and from South America?
Exactly right. Exactly right.
What do you make of those elongated skulls?
Well, Kathy and I did some research down in Nazca and Ica, examining some of the skulls, and what we found out from an archaeological aid, the archaeologists don't want the information to go public because they don't know how to categorize it or portray the information, let's say. But these heads have different bone structures than human heads do. They have extra bones. They're not made like human heads are made, and they have not been shaped. We saw evidence of how you can tell the difference between a skull when they put the boards on and wrap the skull with rope or whatever to make the baby's head, you know, kind of come out like a cone head. But there are heads there that this hasn't happened to. There's no evidence on the bone of any deformation. And these heads are normally like this, and the heads have a different bone structure altogether.
So they're not human.
They're not human, exactly right. But we don't know what they are, and they're kept out of sight. There's only a couple of them on display at the Museum of Natural History in Ica City, which it sounds grandiose, but it's really just a small building with a bunch of artifacts in it. And the rest of the skulls, the most unusual skulls, are kept hidden away. And unless you've got some reason to see them, they won't let you see them.
Did you get to see them?
Oh, yeah.
Why are they more unusual?
I'm sorry, again?
You said that the most unusual skulls are kept hidden away. Why would they be more unusual?
Because of this extra bone structure. In the back of the skull, there is I've forgotten. I'd have to refer to my notes. But there's a bone back there that's in every human. It's just a normal bone. And also on the side of the head, there's a way that the skull is shaped. On these skulls, there's more than one bone, and then there's extra bones on the side. And it's not just one, which might be a freak of nature, but there are dozens and dozens of these. And they're found in different tombs, different surroundings than the bones of the other people, the humans, that these folks obviously were living with at the time.
All right. Are you ready to take calls from the audience?
Let's go for it.
All right. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, hello. It's Kevin from Iroquois Falls, Ontario.
Hello, Kevin.
Hello. How's it going? Hey, Kevin, did you get my call earlier?
Did I get your what?
I tried to send you an email about the CTV News today, about the fact that they're going to be having a UFO report on CTV News.
I think I saw that.
You saw that, eh?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. And
I've read about 400 emails today, so they kind of run together.
Okay, and Jerry, I've heard... you described those giant beings that were in that lost city. They sound eerily similar to the giants that were reported to be in those burial mounds here in North America. Those are huge giants that a lot of the native communities have legends about. Some people even may think that they're even the Nephilim. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, we also have the reports of giants in Ecuador that were 12 foot or so tall. Kathy and I did do a lot of research on the giants in North America, and we've tracked down giants all the way from the East Coast to the West Coast, followed the Indian stories and the legends, and we've gone out looking for the remains, and in some instances we've come across where the burials were at. But anytime these giant bones surface, you've got either the National Geographic Society, the Smithsonian, or the Hiram Bingham University that's going to descend on them, seal it off, take the bones, and then, you know, put the ground back. So I think our best bet in finding the giants' remains are going to be down in South America, where there aren't laws that protect them the way that they're protected up here.
Yes,
you see, even if we found the remains of a giant here, which we did in North America, we couldn't touch it because we go to prison.
Yeah, I know, because they don't want people to know that these beings actually existed. For what reason, I don't know. Probably I don't know why they want people to believe that human beings as we are today are the only intelligent beings here, because, you know, there's legends about these giant beings all over the place. You look at, like, the Indians in the United States of America, they also describe them as being approximately 7 to 10 feet tall with red hair and white skin. And similar beings have also been recorded in the myths in England or the Great Britain, and also all across Europe, and also even into parts of Africa.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
All right, Kevin, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it. 1-800-289-1092, 1-800-289-1092. Is the toll-free number, and if you have a comment or a question, you need to call that number. It's toll-free throughout USA and Canada. If you're outside that area, send me a Flash message. Send it to flash@kevinsmithshow.com, all right? Speaking of Flash messages, I have one from Australia from Tony. And he says, Indiana Jones has nothing on this guy. Jerry, have you ever come across ancient technology in some of these ancient cities?
Well, I haven't come across any ancient technology. We have been looking for it. We've seen evidence of it, and we believe we know how some of these things were done. I believe whatever happened to the Earth back, you know, ages ago, whenever it was that it happened, and we think it's around 10 to 14,000 years ago, whatever it is that happened caused such a shift in the Earth, not necessarily physical, but sociological, that it changed the ecology of the Earth, and it probably wiped out a lot of folks. we know now that there was a comet that slammed into the Indian Ocean about 12,000 years ago. That may be the smoking gun that caused all the changes, but we just don't know.
All right.
We haven't found technology yet.
Okay. Let me answer a technological question, sort of, because I've gotten a couple of flash messages that have nothing to do with the show tonight, but they are important. Those of you who are finding things that are not working on my website, I announced yesterday that our web hosting company had done some changes and had caused some things to stop working. And we're having to recode those things to match the changes that they have made. So we spent all day today doing that, got most of it done. It's not 100% yet, so don't panic, all right? If you're not able to get in things that you used to be able to get into, don't panic. Just wait, and we will, in fact, get that fixed. However, do report it to us as you have. Okay, Jerry, these giants are not just big people. They actually have from the skulls, apparently a whole different physiology.
Yes, you know, and strangely enough, there's also some pictures that are left behind, you know, again, on stone, and these are of people with six fingers. And Kathy recently discovered through her investigation that there's a village deep in the mountains where there's a village of people with six fingers, and we really want to go there and check this out.
What's the significance of the six fingers, do you think?
Well, I don't know. But if there's a whole village of people with six fingers, like we've been told, and from her information it's true, this is going to be perhaps descendants of those people who came here from wherever, and they should have a very unique DNA structure that we can take a look at and determine what their origins are, if their origins are even of this world.
Lloyd Pye, I think you're familiar with, has a skull from, I think it's from South America, that was given to him, and he calls it, or it has been dubbed, the Star Child skull. And he tried for a long time to get DNA testing done on it. Finally got DNA testing, and looking for markers that... The way DNA currently works is they look for markers that are known to be common among humans, and didn't find them. And so all they could say was, we don't know. And
sure.
There's a new type. He was on the show talking about that. There's a new type of DNA test that is, by this time, it should be online, should be working. That simply looks for what is the DNA. It doesn't look for these markers that identify it as human. It just looks for what are the markers, what's there. And so he's hoping to get that test done on the Star Child skull. Is there any possibility that you could get some tests done on any of these elongated skulls in South America?
Well, see, that's the thing. In order to do a DNA test, you have to have a sample. And the best sample, we've been told, is to get one of the molars, because the DNA may still be alive in the molar. But to take a molar out of one of these skulls, you'd have to really jump through some hoops to be entrusted with having that kind of artifact. And without the proper credentials, you could be in big trouble. None of the archaeologists are willing to do that. At least none that we've been in touch with, because they think it's a waste of time. They don't believe it's even likely or even possible, actually, that there's anything unique or unusual. They're just oddball skulls, and, you know, they don't want anything to do with it. If they go out there and put their name on the line, even if there is something unique, their lives will be destroyed, their professional lives.
That's really unfortunate that science doesn't want to be scientific.
I think it's stupid.
Yeah.
They're not scientists. You know, at that point, they become a cult, not occult, but a cult of individuals who are worshiping the same old facts over and over and are trying to keep that alive instead of the actual process of investigation. It doesn't matter if it proves that they're wrong. Science is supposed to be something that answers questions, not promotes the same old dead data that isn't accurate.
All right. Let me give the telephone number, folks. It is 1-800-289-1092. I know you're interested in 2012, and that brings in the Mayan calendar, and that, of course, is from sort of the area that we're talking about. Ancient cities, you know, there are, Jerry, there are accounts, even from Spanish explorers, of having seen personally these giants. They saw them.
Sure, and, they right on a boat once.
Yeah, and they, I think he tore the mast off the boat and swam back to shore or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go back to the phone and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. No, you're not. 1-800-289-1092 is the number to call. When you call, please don't hang up like that, all right? All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Hello, this is Larry from California. How are you doing?
Outstanding, Larry. What's on your mind?
I know I sent you an email. I know you probably read it in one of your thousands of emails that you get, but is there any way you guys can make a copy of the skull and have a police reconstructionist make the face come to life?
Well, actually, hi, Larry. Thanks for calling. That's actually been done. And the face does not look like any of the people that lived in that area. It has more Caucasian features, finer features, than the features of the people that, let's say, were the natives of the area, the ancient inhabitants there. It was a totally different facial structure, and when it was reconstructed, it looked remarkably like, well, Egyptian, really.
Interesting. All right. I was just curious. Thank you.
Thank you for the call.
Thanks for calling.
When you say finer features, do you mean thinner features? Or because I know that the people of the area tend to have sort of broad features.
Yes, the facial structure of the people who are indigenous to the area have wider faces, and the features of the people that had these elongated skulls had a more narrow face. And one of the arguments about that is that, well, the skull was elongated, so therefore it caused the head and the face and everything to shape differently. But I don't buy that, because you can see very clearly on the skulls that have been wrapped that they still maintain the same facial characteristics. They just had, markings on their skull where ropes had been attached. So it's totally a different situation altogether. The features were not the result of the head being deformed. This is how these people were born.
All right, let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller. All right, 1-800-289-1092. 1-800-289-1092. What about the teeth, Jerry? Has anybody counted the teeth?
I never thought about that, and I didn't count the teeth. They just look like a full set of teeth to me. The teeth, well, you know, I can't really address that. I didn't pay that much attention. When I go down again, I'll take a look, and I'll get back to you on that.
The reason I ask is other guests who have been on the show have talked about a race of extraterrestrials who are very human looking, very tall, and instead of having 32 teeth as we are hardwired for, they have 29.
Interesting. Well, I'll go down and take some pictures. Actually, I have some pictures. I might be able to count the teeth. And if I find something unusual about that, either from my pictures or our next trip down, I'll get a hold of you right away and let you know. That's a good question.
Also, this, we've had guests on that talk about some of these giants had a double row of teeth.
Right, and those that had the double row of teeth were the ones that were 12 feet and taller. They seem to be an entirely different race of giants than the ones that we were told were supposed to have lived in this lost city way up in the Andes. Incidentally, there's more than just that one. We discovered there were about three or four others, and each one is about a day's journey from the other, and they're all on top of mountains above 12,000 feet, and they're mostly in pretty good shape. There was one that was kind of broken down a bit, but I think it was from an earthquake.
All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and where are you calling from?
Oh, this is Chris from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Hi, Chris.
How you doing, guys?
Good.
Jerry, I just had a quick question for you. If you might have touched on this, I don't know. I've been having some computer problems tonight, but do any of the locals have any kind of information on what have happened to this race? I mean, why they just kind of disappeared at all?
Well, I asked them about that. What they told us was that there was a great flood, and that after the great flood, that they hadn't seen these people since. Apparently, they moved southward is what they all thought had happened to them. But, you know, they said they hadn't seen them, but at the same time, they were worried they were going to come back. And that's why we thought it was so strange, because, you know, they talk about the great flood down there like it was just yesterday, and that, you know, that the something is going to be coming back soon. We don't know when. So, that's
all right. Chris, does that answer your question?
Yes, yes.
All right, thanks for the call, man.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah, we're about a minute until time for our break. The people are afraid of the former inhabitants, and is that because they were cannibalistic?
Well, they said that. I don't know if they were or not. of course, how would I know, except by the things that these folks had told us. But one thing we're really certain of is that they were fantastic warriors, and everybody was afraid of them. Nobody would mess with them. You don't dare go into their city. And of course, we dared, and the people that took us, they were pretty well flipped out, but they were pretty daring as well, but they wanted to get out of there as quickly as possible.
They certainly didn't want to spend the night without flashlights, huh?
Oh, no, they wouldn't stay there at all, because in their mythology, if you're there at night, the spirits of these people are going to show up, and they'll kill you. And the reality is, actually, that if you're there at night, there are mountain lions and bears that are up there, and they may just be coming through where you're at because they can smell you, they can tell you're there, and they're not afraid of people.
All right, we have to take a break, and we'll be back more with Jerry Wills and this amazing, amazing account of an amazing expedition. And we'll take your calls at 1-800-289-1092, toll-free throughout the USA and Canada. Or your flash messages, if you're outside that area, you can send me an email. Send it to flash@kevinsmithshow.com.
Most of the great music you hear right here on Steel Eye Media Network is supplied by the independent artists from GarageBand.com. If you hear a song you like, go over to GarageBand.com, look it up, download it. You can even buy the group's CDs, in many cases, right there at GarageBand.com.
Call Kevin Smith at 1-800-289-1092.
And we are back. I am talking with Jerry Wills this evening, and you can too. The telephone number to call is 1-800-289-1092. Jerry, we got a flash message that said, this may sound silly, but, oh, and it's from Australia, says, this may sound silly, but do you think that Bigfoot could be descendants of these giant people that you are talking about here tonight?
Well, hello, Australia. Thanks for writing, sending a flash message. You know, that's a really good question, actually. I don't think it's silly at all. What we encountered were some stories there of a group of nativos, natives, that were living back in the jungle deeper in the Andes that are about 3 foot tall and completely covered in black hair, and they smell really bad. And they're pretty vicious little native things. Now, I know that's not Bigfoot, but...
That's Littlefoot.
Really... It's Littlefoot, exactly. Mm-hmm. I don't know what these things are. We were actually going to go and try to videotape them, but we were told that they'll shoot you with their blowguns, and you don't want to get shot with those because of the karari they put on the darts that causes you to die, and, well, we just weren't in the mood for that. And I didn't have my anti-blowgun shield.
Well, let me tell you something. I have never encountered those people, obviously. But when I was stationed in East Timor, a lot of the native people there have blowguns. And here in the West, a lot of times people sort of chuckle at that. You know, they think about all these modern weapons and high technology things that we've got, and they chuckle at that. Well, I'm going to tell you something. I have seen a guy shoot a bird out of the air in flight with a blowgun.
I've seen that as well, and it is astonishing. Those things are accurate and deadly.
That's right. And there was a New Zealand soldier that was killed because he was shot in the leg with a blowgun.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Well, you know, when we were going back last year, it was 2006, December 31st, we went down to Peru for almost a year. We were headed to a place, that's on the eastern slope of the Andes, again, where there are supposed to be these statues of people. And they're very finely made statues. The descriptions that we got from the natives when we showed them pictures and books was that, oh, it looks like this, like Grecian statues, beautiful pieces of art that are down somewhere in the jungle. Well, it's really, really hard to get to it. It's 4 days by boat and about a week hike to get to this place through mosquito and jungle. I mean, it's just dense stuff like I've been talking about. We were going to go. We were getting all the things prepared for it. When we arrived to Peru, we found out that a group of seven doctors had gone into a village near the same area. This village controls that area. They're a bunch of natives. They don't wear clothes. They're natives. Well, one of the women was pregnant, and one of the male doctors gave her a pelvic exam. So that's not permitted, and all seven of them were killed in their sleep, and their bodies were dumped on the edge of the property between their land and the rest of the world. So we had to abandon our hopes of going in there and documenting that find.
Well, I think I would abandon my plans to go in there as well. I it's obvious they were not in the mood for visitors.
No, and there's still headhunters back there, too. Still cannibals. I mean, it sounds crazy, but it's true.
Well, look, people who have not done much traveling sometimes have the idea that the world is pretty much like where they're standing. It isn't. It really isn't.
There is such a vast difference between where we are now as you're listening to your radio, even if you're in a remote place, between that and where we were in this jungle, there was nothing. There was no sign that there was anything else in the world except us and all this jungle and all these ancient things around us, and that was it.
Do you think it's possible that South America was once as highly civilized, when these ancient civilizations, as highly civilized and advanced as anything we know about in the in Europe or in Asia?
I think so. I'm pretty well convinced of it. We got a hold of a document from the Vatican that was smuggled out to us. And this document showed that the Amazon basin was once a very large inland ocean. And what we've extrapolated from that map was that the water went back up into these canyons. There was a river that went from east to west through the Andes. The Andes rose, and all that landmass rose, and that's why there's no ocean there today. And that's why the Amazon basin only has a few inches of topsoil, but beneath that, it's nothing but clay. Well, there on the eastern slope of the Andes, where the water would have been, where we projected it would have been, is right at the same place that we're finding lost cities. So we can pretty well calculate where we're going to find places just based on where the water used to be. And in every case, every time we go looking, that's where we find a place. That and higher. Whatever happened, I think that the Amazon basin as an ocean, as an inland ocean, whatever occurred through that water all the way up to 12,000 feet into the Andes, and that's why there's a sandbar up there. But you can find sandbars in the Amazon jungle. It's mostly sand and clay.
The one of the things that is a mystery, and this was already brought up by one of the callers, is what happened? And you said you think it was the Great Flood. But it's a mystery that suddenly these civilizations, these people, all seem to have abandoned their great cities.
Yeah. You know, there's a city down near Nazca that will help to rewrite the history books. One of several that are along the coastline of Peru. But this city had just been completely, everyone picked up and left. They even left their cooking utensils where they were, their clothes where they were, everything, and they just left. This city is about 6,000 years old. And it's a city that would have housed at least 150,000 people that now is in the most abject desert you've ever seen in your life. It's like the Sahara.
And all the signs are that they left suddenly?
Yeah. That's one of the great mysteries of this place, because they don't know why they left. They don't even know who they were. And then you go up in northern Peru around Chanquillo, you find this three-walled and tiered city that's unlike anything that's been found anywhere else. And you go to Corral, and Corral, you should look it up on Google and take a look at some of the pictures. It looks like something from the future, not from the past, at least in the way it's reconstructed. It has pyramids all around it, and these pyramids are indeed older than anything on Earth. Corral was a place where there was 1,000 years of peace. They've not found any pottery. They found no weapons. And they found no food, and yet there was a place that housed 100,000 people and must have had plenty of water. Now it's in the middle of the desert. There are no weapons. There are no pottery. And pottery is really big, because pottery is how you hold your water. That's how you hold your food. That's what you cook on. There is nothing there, nothing at all. And it looks like it's from the future. It's just a beautiful place.
And you say that you can go on Google and see pictures of the reconstruction of it?
Yeah, it's spelled C-A-R-A-L. I sent out to our newsletter that folks can sign up for, I sent them out KZM files from Google Earth. If you join Expeditions, the Expeditions newsletter, go to expeditionstv.com. You'll see where it says subscribe. You can go back through the old newsletters and pick up the location for the KZM files and take a look at this for yourself. It's really easy to see. You can also go on Google and search for it and see it that way as well, including the reconstruction. This was one of the locations that we're going to be putting it together as a trip for next year. This year, we've got a trip that's going down to, starts in La Paz, Bolivia, and it goes north to Lake Titicaca. And from there, we fly over to the jungle, to the Amazon jungle. And after the jungle, we go to Machu Picchu. All the details, they're not all online just yet, but I'll have them online within the next few days. Interestingly, there was something called the Birdmen of Peru. These are shaman who were able to fly through the air. Kathy just recently discovered a mile-long geoglyph on the Altiplano, just right there at the border of Bolivia and Peru, and there it is.
I hate to do it, but we're into a break. We will be back in just a moment, folks.
Hours seem to turn into days, God, I'm hoping. But all I can do is pray. My timing seems right. Then it's my time. This is all part of a dream. But you know I can't sleep. And I'm singing, hey, what you doing with your life, child? Don't you let them beat you down, just smile. Hey, don't you ever feel alone. We're all in the cold, crying and singing. Life, child, don't you let them beat you down, just smile. Don't you ever feel alone. We're all in the cold, crying and singing.
Get it all. Become a member at kevinsmithshow.com.
Call the Kevin Smith Show at 1-800-289-1092.
All right, we are back. We are on Final Approach, and we're talking with Jerry Wills. Jerry, when the break took over, you were about to tell us about this mile-long geoglyph.
It's a new discovery that I alerted folks to that are on our newsletter list. Kathy just recently discovered a strange object on the Altiplano. It's at about 13,000 feet, and it's just north of Paz, Bolivia. I can't remember how far, but we studied this. We finally got a good satellite image of it and started tracing it on paper. Lo and behold, it is a person that is known as a birdman of Peru. It's one of the flying shaman. And what that means is that it's a person, a shaman, back in the 1700s, for example, or 1676, I believe, was one of the first references we found of these folks. Men who just floated through the air and, you know, We don't know much more than that about it, but there are some very reliable reports from priests who mentioned having seen them. And in one instance, this one priest said that he saw these guys come through the trees, and they came between them and some natives who were shooting at him with bows and arrows and stopped the conflict so they could get out of there. Well, Kathy's located a geoglyph on the altiplano of a flying shaman, and it's about a mile long. It's huge.
Have you seen the video from Mexico of a flying humanoid?
Yeah, I have. I've seen that. I haven't seen it recently. If you have a link, maybe you can send it to me.
Actually, it's going to be in this week's K-Files e-zine. I think you get that, but I'll send it to you.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Got a question that I got to get answered before we get to the end of the show.
Uh-huh.
What you mentioned this blue crystal skull that's supposed to be out there in the Andes somewhere. What's the significance of that?
I really don't know. I'm not I'm not an expert on the crystal skulls. Joshua told me that it was very important, and it seemed that, you know, he was just so.
You're talking about Joshua Shapiro.
Yeah, Joshua Shapiro. He was just so excited about trying to find this thing. I figured if we were able to find it, then that would be another person looking for it for him, because he feels that it has great significance. But I believe he would be a better person to ask than me, because I don't know what the significance is exactly.
I think they're supposed, I can't remember the number. There's supposed to be so many of these crystal skulls. And somehow, when they all get united, some sort of power vortex takes place?
Well, that's what we understand as well, that there's some phenomenal event that occurs, and that's why I felt if we were to find it, we'd get a hold of Joshua and let him know we have it so he'd get access to it. But we haven't found it so far.
All right, tell us a little bit about Expeditions TV. Now, you've mentioned that a couple of times, and I have to say it is phenomenal TV, but go ahead and tell us, because not everyone is familiar.
Expeditions TV is the result of us going down to South America and video documenting some of the places that we go to. Because so many people can't go where we go, we figured if we made a video of it, a really good one, then at least you'd be able to see it and come to your own conclusions about what you're seeing. So we have some videos up there right now. I just added another one called Mist. It's some footage we took at Machu Picchu when there were clouds all over the place. But it's a media portal. It's where you can go for free and watch these videos. It's our gift to everyone who's out there, you know, that's listening tonight or is interested in this subject.
The first one of those that I saw was at your home when you lived over here in the Phoenix area. And you gave us a screening of one that you had, I don't think you had put it up on the website yet.
No, I hadn't, not at that time.
Phenomenal stuff. Really, really phenomenal stuff. I think that one, I'm not sure if it was that one or one that I've seen on your site, had to do with a place where there was a cave in the side of the mountain,
right.
And an energy vortex there.
Right, it's a place called Pukar, and it's called Pukar because it's the town that's closest to it. But yeah, that's a pretty amazing place. Incidentally, one of the really cool things, Kevin, is that we've found a fully functional Stargate.
What?
And, yes.
Man, now, see, we're going to have you back to talk about this. Okay, go ahead very quickly and tell us about this.
The Stargate is something, that's what the name we gave it. It is a thing, I don't know how to describe it, so it's a thing that will transport you from point A to point B. It's not a mythological thing. It's a real thing. I took a group of 8 people there on our trip last June, and I showed them how it works, and one by one, they glowed and vanished and came back again. They may even be listening to the show right now. I don't know. But during this trip, when we're starting in La Paz, this is going to be starting in August of this year, we're going to be going to that place. And right in proximity to this place, we found another version of Markawasi. So we're going to be doing some more video and some more research while we're there, as well as seeing that flying shaman. So if folks are interested to go to Peru, this is going to be a hell of a good adventure.
I would say so. Now, this Stargate, is it a natural thing, or is it something that has been manufactured by hand?
It's been made. And on Expeditions Magazine, I have some pictures of it up there. It's called the Doorway of Oromomuru. And I was told how to turn this thing on by an old fellow. His name was Carlos. He was a shaman, Aymara. Lived there at Lake Titicaca. We became friends, and he gave me the instructions on how to turn it on and how to use it. And next time we get together, if you want, I can tell you what that was all about, because I turned it on, and I was gone for a while.
Were you aware that you were somewhere else?
Oh, yeah. Kathy was, too, and the other people with us. We had only been married a short while, and when I went through this thing, she was just broke down into tears because I was gone for a little while, and she didn't know if I was coming back. And honest to God, I didn't know if I was coming back either. It was pretty scary for me.
Yeah, we got to have you back to talk about that. We absolutely have to have you back to talk about this Stargate. Look, one more time before we get to the end of the show, tell us your web address.
The web address is expeditionstv.com. It's spelled with an X, not E-X. So it's expeditionstv.com. That's for the High Adventure website. And, of course, my personal site is jerrywills.com. It's pretty easy.
All right. Well, Jerry, I want to thank you for being with us. As always, it has been more than fascinating. And I, since we've already begun talking about your next visit, I do hope you will come back and be with us soon and talk with us about this Stargate.
Well, thanks. I really appreciate having the opportunity to be here on your show. It's a real privilege, and I'd like to tell all of the folks listening, thank you for listening as well. I really, really enjoy being able to communicate with folks this way, and you've got the best show on radio, so being with you is a real treat.
Thank you very much. If you will, just stay on the line with me a moment.
All right, folks, the end has come for this edition of the Kevin Smith Show. But we'll be back tomorrow night. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too, and you can call me whatever you'd like. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.